Hello, my beautiful beanies, and welcome to The Bean for Thursday. First with yesterday's news, I and Glenn ZB, we're looking back at Wednesday. Should Lance O'Sullivan revamp the Maori Party? Rachel Smalley on this shortly. We're going to reignite the Auckland Stadium debate because we haven't talked about it for at least 5 minutes. Rejecting tin tomatoes for charity and lending out your sleeping bag. But before any of that, nothing makes you feel more Christmassy than viral videos of kittens being bludgeoned to death.
The video is shocking, Craig, is it not? And the age of the offenders even more so.
Look, yeah, it is absolutely disturbing, especially the age of the offenders and filming it as well. And the casualness and the lack of empathy when they decide to kill the kitten. If you just even listen to the audio, it's so disturbing. It's one of the worst things I've probably seen.
Okay, the youths have been referred to police youth services. Is that enough of a punishment? What do you make of that?
Well, it's got to go through the process, and I think, you know, police will handle this. You know, it's had such a high profile around it sort of thing. We look at the timeline. We received the information by 12 o'clock midday yesterday when we decided to expose this, what it was, and by 7 o'clock we'd posted it. We had 13,500 messages 4 hours later. We had the information to police in the morning. They've served their warrant and raid and gone into the house, and now the people are in custody. You know, I think they'll handle this quite seriously around it, because the effects of having child animal abuse do lead, you know, these are the early stages of potential murderers, psychopaths and stuff like that. So we really have to take this very seriously.
So there is a guy from an organisation called Paw Justice, which is, I get what they were trying to do, but I feel like, with the name I mean, but I feel like it just sounds like there's not going to be very good justice. Anyway, Lance O'Sullivan, he wants to... what does he want to do exactly? Rachel Smalley's been looking at it.
Now, Dr. O'Sullivan is a success story. And while he could have moved to any of our cities or overseas to advance his career and his bank balance, he's chosen to stay in the far north and help those who need it most. Where there might be a glitch in the system, if you like, is that O'Sullivan says if he's going to lead the Maori Party, he'll do it on his own. And so he should. I've argued the same point about the Greens' leadership structure as well, this co-leadership thing. In politics, you need one clear leader, one person who heads up the party, one person who's accountable. Co-leaders, I think, tend to take on this sort of co-managerial role. It's clumsy and it's ineffective. And we don't need managers in politics. Managers are box tickers. We need leaders. We need disruptors. O'Sullivan fits that bill. Remember earlier this year when O'Sullivan slammed the anti-vaccination movement? It was at a screening of the documentary Vaxxed in Kaitaia. And I'm with O'Sullivan on this. He slammed that movement and said their conspiracy theories and the misinformation they were spreading was killing children. He jumped on stage and he said that to the anti-vaxxers and those who'd come to watch that documentary. He said, "Your presence here will cause babies to die." It was, at the very least, incredibly confronting. He's nothing if not a disruptor. Now, he's the man, I think, to lead the Maori Party, but the party has to shift on its co-leadership stance, and they should. They've got little choice. In the midst of the mood for change in this year's election, the party was the casualty. They failed to get cut through because of the resurgence of Labour. They were hamstrung by their association with National. They badly misread the electorate, and the Maori vote deserted the Maori Party. O'Sullivan, I think, could turn that around. And I hope the Maori Party is dynamic in its thinking to see his worth and to recognise that O'Sullivan will be to the Maori Party what Ardern has been to Labour. And that is a true game changer.
Certainly, I think we should put all the best looking people in charge for a start. That seems like a good idea. I mean, obviously, you know, having good policies and stuff, it may or may not be important as well. Remember when we used to argue about whether Auckland should have a new stadium? Well, Phil Goff has brought it up again.
You'd be cheering, wouldn't you, mate?
Yes, I would be.
Why? What's wrong with Eden Park?
Well, Eden Park is, you know, an institution, it's a cultural icon, but it's manifestly not up to purpose. I mean, what, 21, 22 fixtures a year? It's architectural catastrophe. It's in the wrong part of town. Auckland needs that land for, you know, urban development.
Okay. So if it's already a catastrophe because it only does 21 to 26 events a year, why do we have to spend even more money on a even bigger new stadium?
Well, put it this way, what do you want Auckland to be? It's a serious destination in Asia-Pacific. We need a stadium. I think the case has already been made for that. How it's funded, well, there's many ways to skin a cat. But we need a new stadium, and we need it down on the waterfront. It's the obvious place for it.
Okay,
by selling Eden Park.
Yeah. Okay, so we only fill the current stadium when the All Blacks are playing tests.
Yeah, but if you build it smart, you'll have all sorts of stuff you can do down there, from concerts, spectaculars, all sorts of stuff.
He really, I feel like he failed to come up with a comprehensive list of all sorts of things that you can have at the stadium. You have concerts and sports events. What other things do you do in a stadium? I don't... Really large meetings. I mean, I'm just trying. I've got quite a good imagination. I'm struggling to think how you fill up a stadium for anything other than a concert or a sports event. I mean, I suppose if you had a religious cult that got completely out of control, you could get together and. Is that going to happen in New Zealand? Right. Anyway, onto the really big story of yesterday, of course. Charities rejecting tinned tomatoes and chickpeas. What's going on?
I don't believe that I would donate fresh fruit. Or vegetables, even. I just don't think I would. Because you don't know how long... Have you wasted your money that you've invested, to be generous? Because you don't know how long they're going to be sitting around, how long they're going to... and whether... If they're not going to open a tin of chickpeas and eat them, what makes you think they're going to cook up a piece of broccoli? Anyway, I don't think I need to go any further. I think the point to me is fairly obvious. Clark said, I've been saying it for 5 years. For God's sake, ring your refuge and ask what they need. It won't be tomatoes. Okay, so it's not tomatoes. And I understand that if they've got too many tins of tomatoes, they don't need any more. But why have they got too many? Because they don't give them away, because people don't want them, because people won't eat them. Then let them starve. Does that sound a bit reckless on my part? Seriously? If you're given food that's good and healthy and will sustain you and you won't eat it, then you don't need it in the first place. That's my bottom line, folks. And I'm pulling the plug on a donation.
I feel like I'd like to be on the receiving end from a donation of people like Leighton Smith and Mike Hosking. It might be some nice wine. From the Hosking Hawksby household, there'd be all this sort of paleo, yummy. I think you could do quite well out of those donations. We're going to finish up here talking sharing sleeping bags. I mean, it's that time of the year when people go away. But should you do it? I don't think Marcus thinks you should.
But someone asked me if they could borrow him a sleeping bag. And to me, that's a no-go zone. And it's not because they'll be sleeping in it. It's because the thing that concerns me about sleeping bags, because it's a good one, is that it's not they'd be sleeping in it. I wouldn't be concerned about that. It's those people that sort of shuffle around the tramping hut and eat in it and do things like that. I don't think that they would treat the sleeping bag the way I treated it. And I've spoken to a couple of people, and one guy spoke and said, no, I'd lend it, no worries, if people look after it. I'm very good with lending stuff. And I wonder why I am so uptight when it comes to lending. But the question to you, quite straightforward for tonight, is it unusual for me not to want to lend my sleep? Is there something mean-spirited about that? Because the reality is, with the young kids, I hardly ever use a sleeping bag. But it's one of those things you buy, you think, well, that's going to last me a long time. It's feathers. I'm going to look after it. I suppose what I could do is buy a cheap one from the warehouse and say, here you go, borrow that. And just realize it's $40 gone. I'm not going to be too concerned about it. So do I need two sleeping bags? The good one and the knockabout one that people can just borrow.
Okay, that's clearly insane. He's going to buy something new so he can lend it to other people and not use himself. It really is the time of year where I no longer know what's happening anymore. That has been News Talks have been for Thursday. I wonder if I'll know what's happening tomorrow. Probably not. See you then, though. I'm Glenn ZB.